being restored. That's why we're here.
Well, that's not what's on the agenda.
I know that's not on the agenda, but we're here to save lives.
Excuse me.
That are not.
Are we recording?
Yes, we are. It's recorded. Ben, you can't say people are dead anyway.
Okay, we are having trouble with the recording system, which is what we are required to have. We will. Okay. The committee has been called to order. The committee is going to discuss the actually perspectives. If anyone, particularly as relate, can you still hear back there or not hear?
Yes.
We're okay now. The what I'd like to ask the committee to do is talk about. Just among ourselves, obviously among the public, those watching on the internet, the perspective we've had to the material presented, I thought it was extraordinarily. Gwyneth. 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 We are going to recess the committee until order can be restored. We will reconvene the committee. I would ask for cooperation from all those in attendance, and I know these are heartfelt and passionate issues that need to be addressed, and believe me, we are addressing them. So if we continue with the committee agenda, I will then deviate from the agenda and allow Gwyneth, who has been here, I think, every day, to come forward and say whatever is not only in your mind but also on your heart. So if we could have that cooperation from those in attendance to watch us and help us with your thoughts and prayers, do our work, that would be very much appreciated. So in the meantime, what I'd like to do is have the committee, we've had some excellent presentations over the last week, 10 days or so. Just random thoughts on what we've heard so far, what we see as some of our challenges, what we see as some of the problems and opportunities that face us as we go forward with this committee's work.
Mr. Chair, if I could begin, and I would just like to preface my remarks with admitting that I'm very much of a neophyte in these policy areas, and so the information that I've gleaned from working through the interim on the readjustment process, and then the information that I've gained through sitting in the information sharing sessions that we have here, have been really valuable to me. And I think that from about a 40,000-foot level, I think that there are some things that really glaringly stand out here. And one of them is how incredibly complex and fractured the delivery systems are. I mean, we haven't even got into the mental health aspects or the alcohol and drug aspects of this. And all the time that we've been spent has just been in describing this incredibly complex, convoluted, fractured, cobbled together delivery system and safety net system that we have. And I would think that there would be great value in trying to do what we can to group like services and like funding streams together in a more comprehensive way to try to deal with some of what appear to be holes and gaps and overlaps and all different kinds of things like that. And I realize that, you know, just saying it is a very simplistic thing to, it's easy to say it, it's going to be very difficult to do it.
Really, the first thing that I learned in this process with regard to healthcare delivery systems is that it's not a system at all. We have a patchwork quilt that has been built up in kind of knee-jerk reactions to solve a specific problem here, a specific problem there. And at the end, what we've got is, to use Representative Dr. Bates' phraseology, an absolutely Byzantine system that it takes a Kasparov or a Billy Fisher to weave your way through this thing, and it's very unfriendly and unhumane. That's got to change. That's one of the things that I see right off the bat. There is not a simple answer or solution to that. That's the first thing I think that this committee has to address, is simplifying the process, not only in terms of the administration of it, but the ease of client, quote, customer service. That's the first charge I see. Representative Cruz.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, I appreciate what the chair has done for this committee. Representative Bates and I were up to our eyeballs in this all last session, but unfortunately, very few legislators even get a 40,000-foot view of the system. And I wish there was some way that the entire body could get the depth of knowledge that this committee, and I appreciate, Mr. Chair, you allowing my committee to be part of this. I think it's helpful for all of us. And I wish we should have required all committees to be part of this, but some of them are busy, I guess. But when we look at the things that are facing the state, and we look at our major funding allocations, this is in the top two, okay, right behind education. So it's that level of importance, and it's unfortunate that so few people in this process really understand very much about it. When you talk about the complexity, Mr. Chair, if you go to the ORSs, you will find that the body of law addressing Medicaid and the health plan or the medical aspect is 30 pages long. It's really rather concise. But then you get into the administrative rules, and you will find that you will have two full binders. And what I've collected so far takes us up to developmental disability, and I haven't gone beyond that because that would take another two binders, and then we get into mental health. So when you talk about the complexity, it certainly exists. Now, I'm not trying to cast aspersions on anybody here, because what we have done in this patchwork system is we have reacted to points in time. Okay, and we develop rules around points in time. The federal government will do another something and we'll react to that. We will see a need and we will react to that. Truly what needs to happen with our healthcare system is we need to assume we have nothing at all and build what we think would be the best thing out there. And, you know, with the full understanding that there's going to be carve-outs, there's going to be all the things we currently have, because we have specific populations with specific needs. But you can do carve-outs, you can do exceptions in a matrix that flows together, and that's something we don't have right now. You know, there is no simple solution to this, but I would think that one of the things we should be looking for is a system to where somebody who is receiving the Oregon Health Plan understands what the hell it is they're receiving. Somebody who's on the Oregon Health Plan can actually fill out their own forms. That can be done. That's not that hard to do, but the fact is that sometimes not even the caseworkers understand the forms they're filling out. Okay? The complexity, you know, we talk about people being responsible for their own health care. How can they be when they can't understand the system? Okay. So, you know, the challenges ahead of us are incredibly daunting. But I think, you know, and I think there's a commitment from my committee, from Chair Westland, from the chairs of the Senate committees, and from Senator Winters in the Ways and Means Committee, that we aren't going to be satisfied this time with identifying problems. We're going to get to solutions.
Representative Merkley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think we've had an excellent overview of the different programs that comprise this matrix of healthcare services. I don't feel like I really understand these from the point of view of the applicant. And if I know within there are advocates within some of the human services areas that I know personally who help people kind of work the system, that is, understand the system. And I don't know if there's someone who serves that role for low-income healthcare clients who could help us understand what it looks like when you're applying. I think that would be very useful. And I think several of the comments assume that it's very difficult, and I think that that's probably right, and it's probably even more difficult than we believe it is. And maybe there are things within that process. Are there multiple forms, multiple offices, where there could be a single office, a single form? So those aren't really what the programs look like, but they do shape the experience from accessibility from the public. Second, I think we all realize that there are constraints at the federal level, but those constraints are always changing. And I don't know if it's possible for us to come up with a conditional system, a system we would want if we could get the federal government to agree, and then maybe we could go after it. If we fail, we don't change the system, but if we don't ask, we certainly don't succeed. I keep wondering, and this is just in the very large-scale brainstorming mode, whether rather than having so many different plans with so many different defined benefits, it might make more sense for people to essentially earn a certain health care voucher from the system that they're then able to employ, whether they're entering into a group plan or an individual plan or so on and so forth, that combines the strength of a simple system for service with the advantages of different types of healthcare for different people. But anyway, That's just my thoughts for the moment.
Well, I think those are excellent thoughts. You mentioned here from the advocates. I mean, there are many groups that we haven't heard from yet. I mean, we are early in this process, and we haven't heard from hospitals, physicians, psychologists, pharmacists,
consumers.
We haven't heard from the advocates. We haven't heard from the consumers. So what I'm trying to do here is, after a great deal of information that we've assimilated, and I'm actually, I'm very proud of the committee. I think we've done a very good job. The presentations have been superlative. What I'm trying to do is just take a breath here to recap, see if there's any questions that come out of that, perspectives, things we've learned, things you're liking, things you're not liking. That's what the purpose of this is. Representative March.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, you likened this to a quilt. That could very well be, only there's a lot of pieces left out of that quilt. It's not made of whole cloth at this point. And indeed, we haven't talked to the consumers yet, heard from them, or providers, or interfaced how all of these pieces interface with some of our other partners out there, nonprofits, counties, who work in concert with us. In what we've seen already, I mean, just some things leap out, and this comes out of my auditing background, I guess. I think there might be, given the times we are in financially, there might be some savings in referral fees. There might be some savings in the whole insurance system if their high risk pool was treated accurately in the rejection process, because I think we have a false sense of who's getting rejected and who's not. So I mean, those specific things, and I think we've asked for some specific data to be reported back to us, and when we look at those budgets, I think we might have a picture of some little savings in that area. So I just wanted to mention that as some specifics. That my old auditing thing, something strikes you wrong, usually it's a good area to kind of let's take another look at. Not necessarily you're going to find something, but it's another time to take another look at it.
Well, I think it's not only savings, but maximizing the federal dollars where we know some of those are slipping through the cracks.
Right. Equity, too.
Representative Bates.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We've just completed Health Care 101, and I congratulate everyone's panel for hanging in there. It's sort of mind-numbing, and unfortunately there's a lot more out there that we'll have to absorb as the weeks go along. But I think we've gotten through some of the basics, and so people have an understanding now of some of the problems facing our lack of a health care delivery system. The chair, before this committee met, said the Oregon Health Plan is going to radically change, look very different when we get through here. I think he's absolutely correct. And some of those changes may be things that none of us really expected or thought of. I believe we do need a true Oregon health plan, and that's a plan for all of Oregon. The Medicaid program is not standing apart from the other parts of the state as far as health care is concerned, and we've learned already that everything that happens inside the Medicaid program affects the commercial plan and affects the Medicare plan and affects those people who are not insured. I don't think you can deal with this entire problem I don't think you can deal with Medicaid alone without dealing with the rest of the problems of the state, too. And that means anything from streamlining how we handle commercial insurance, putting everybody on a level playing field as far as a benefit package is concerned, to going down and making people more accountable for their own health care, by lifestyle and how they spend their money. Because we have exploding health care costs, and part of that is that we have a huge demand, and there's no individual responsibility for that in most cases. So that has to be part of the equation, too. And to bring that into the Medicaid program is not impossible, but difficult. It should be also done. To grapple with a problem that no state and union has solved, and that at the national level we have not solved, is somewhat of a daunting task. But it is not unusual for states to do that and start resolving some of these issues. I don't think we're going to have any sweeping answer to this, but I think we can take piece after piece, work it, and put together a much better and manageable health care system for the entire state. And I'm not just thinking of the, again, not just thinking of the Medicaid system. Private health insurance is in trouble. The state premiums cannot be sustained at the level we're doing. You can only shift so much back to the individual. The cost shifts that are going on are, I believe, unsustainable and unfair. And we're leaving people out of the system, which when they can't get primary care, can't get their mental health problems taken care of, can't get their drug problems taken care of, ultimately come back to the system at much higher cost. And it spills over, as we know, in corrections and the social problems. So we have to look at this, I believe, very broadly, very widely, and try to craft a system that is bigger than just the Medicaid problem here. And with that, I'll stop, Mr. Chair.
Well, I think those are, you know, excellent remarks. You know, really, I appreciate you making the hill, or putting in perspective how steep the hill is. And that's made worse by what can only be described as a catastrophic financial situation. You know, you might not like it. I don't like it. But when a state loses as much money as this state has, $1.8 billion, not at the beginning of the biennium, but late, most of it late, you know, that is a much more difficult situation to overcome. And if we fail in this task, this very daunting task, yes, I mean, there's going to be huge individual impacts on people's lives. But the resulting system, if we fail, that we will go back to, will be a simple federal minimum Medicaid structure. That's what happens if we fail. So we'll take all your help, all your thoughts, all your prayers, because we're all in this together at the end of the day. We're all in this together. Any other comments from the committee? Representative Dalto.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I sort of just jotted down notes because it's I want to focus really on what I wanted to say, but Representative Merkley reiterated a concept that's been sort of floating through my mind a lot, and that is a voucher system for health care services in Oregon. You know, although I am as well, like Representative Morgan suggested, a neophyte in health policy matters, I have a real passion for the health issues, and I want to learn as much as I can, and that's sort of why I've been sitting in on this community. I feel a voucher system could potentially be a model for empowering Oregon's healthcare consumers and putting more choice into a system, and I hope that we'll be able during the course of this session to hear testimony from folks that can deliver you know, ideas of what a model could look like, and so I look forward to doing that. And I don't know that any state has gotten it right. I'm sure most of the states in this country are experiencing the challenges that we are, but there's a system that works out there for sort of seamlessly integrating our public health service. I'd love to hear about it.
Yeah, and I think you raised a very good point. We're on kind of a parallel track system. I mean, we are going to be able to put our fingers in the holes, some of the holes in the dike, to craft as good a structure as we possibly can within existing law, both state and federal. We can change the state law. But for us to get some of the bigger picture issues, you're talking vouchers, I mean, there's a lot of good ideas out there. We're going to have to come to agreement in both the House and the Senate, the executive branch. These don't make it without executive branch advocacy. We're going to have to come to agreement with the executive branch on whatever the structure of this, quote, OHP3 is going to look like. And quite frankly, I hope it's aggressive, revolutionary, and we all have to fight like crazy to get it. But for the purposes of budgeting for the 03-05 biennium, we can only do what we can count on. And then we've all got to work together on a bigger picture waiver. I mean, we have a March deadline, March 10th or 15th, to have the kind of the vanilla, what I call the vanilla package done, it's got to plug into the budget. Budget's got to balance. But then our charge is also to, our charge is also to come up with the longer term solution, real solution. I'm really excited about it. And it's going to be a lot of late nights in this hearing room. I mean, we've been able to hear testimony under certain circumstances, but we will be here late many nights. That's why I'm glad it's an afternoon committee, because that gives us that flexibility. And Representative Cruz will buy the pizza. hold on just a second, sir. Who else? Someone, Representative March.
Thank you. And you mentioned going back to Medicaid, and frankly, I would consider that a total failure. The reason Oregon left the Medicaid system was to serve more people, to serve as many Oregonians as possible, and any, you know, retreat from serving as many people as we can is going to be a, you know, I recognize we have parameters here and money limitations, but at the same time, going back to Medicaid straight, as you will, is not savings. There's no real savings in that. It's you some things are more expensive under that model than what we're doing now. So the net effect would not be positive for Oregon.
No, we go back to vanilla Medicaid or whatever you want to call it. That's a huge cost shift. Employers, employees start picking it up. More people can't afford to buy private health insurance anymore. They drop off, go on the Oregon Health Plan or the Medicaid version of it. They go to the emergency room. Costs get shifted. It just spirals down. It is not acceptable. It's not going to work. And it's going to be a big problem. Where does the committee want to go next week? I mean, we've got kind of the overview. We're going to hear Gene Thorne finish up with OMAP tomorrow. What groups of testifiers, witnesses, what information are you not getting that you want so far? Or that are you not getting so far that you'd like to hear? Gordon?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had the experience that I think Representative Cruz and Representative Bates and maybe some of the rest of you have had recently, to talk to one of the local IPAs. There are four or five of them in Southern Oregon that seem to be doing pretty well. I'd like to hear from them what answers they have to answering maybe partly through the state or the whole state eventually for part of the plan.
I that's a great idea. Our superlative committee staff, Rick Rakovian, has already contacted Dorvin. He's your guy.
Mm-hmm. Joel Darvin. Mm-hmm.
Darvin. We've been in contact with Pat Gifford out of Central Oregon. Now, there's different types of contractors. We're going to have to hear from,
right,
you know, several types. So, okay, sure. One, contractors.
You mentioned the consumer. I'm sure we'll be hearing from them. What groups would we normally be asking to come in?
Well,
or would it be individuals?
What we'll do is we'll have invited testimony, make sure certain people get here. But we will also have open testimony. I mean, sign up the. So, and you see, I understand that you're here, and we appreciate that. And we are going to allow very, very limited testimony, but we have noticing requirements, and we've got to notice 24 hours ahead of time what we're going to do at this meeting. And this is noticed as an invitational meeting. So we will have very limited invited testimony, even though traditionally to have invited testimony, it has to be on, you know, the name has to be on the agenda. Anyway, Representative Mona Sanderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to quiz the public agencies on why they bill for some things and not bill for other things. And I'm thinking primarily of an example would be the immunization program where they give free immunizations, all right, and anyone can come and get a free immunization as long as you live in the county. I would assume they would be able to access CHIP money if they did that. But they don't at this point in time, and I'd like to know, are there restraints, or would it cost too much or would that be a barrier because you'd have to figure out exactly what their eligibility would be, and then that would decrease the number of people that would be immunized. So that's one thing. And then like in the schools, for school nursing, why aren't school nurses billing for some of that CHIP money? I mean, I would think that there would be a horrendous amount of money possible if there would be billing, if there could be billing. And sort of formulating and I've talked with some insurance people about this, formulating a insurance plan that the schools could have, and therefore the nurses could bill. Those types of issues I'd like to discuss.
Well, I think you're getting to what Representative March is getting at with regard to why we do some things, we don't do others, what that results. What's the impact of that on quality of health in the state? And what I'm also hearing you say is maybe we ought to have a presentation on SCHIP, which is Children's Health Insurance Program. I think that's part of what I'm hearing you say. So we'll get that one down. Representative Cruz.
Yeah, we need to. I mean, if we're going to get to local providers, we certainly have to include the safety net clinics in that matrix. I don't think there's any question about that. And I think besides hearing from the plans, I think we need to hear from some of the providers in the plans, not just the plans themselves. And I would like to hear from folks like Kaiser, who have a good system that isn't experiencing the inflation the rest of the system is, as to what they are doing different. I think we need to get that sort of thing on the record. And I think we need to hear from the insurance side of things, because you're right, the whole thing is connected. We need to hear from Regents and folks like that. As far as if you're getting into consumers, certainly groups like NAMI and other folks like that need to come in and testify. But the question on that is, do we want to get into their concerns before we've had a chance for an overview of the mental health system? And maybe it's okay to do one before the other, but I think it would be more appropriate for a lot of the consumer folks out there. This system is incredibly blended, and they may present one place, but then they end up having needs other places. As complicated as the Oregon Health Plan is, our mental health system may be even more complicated, but it's certainly complicated, and I think in many ways probably as dysfunctional. And now Department of Human Services has rolled A&D into that, which causes me a great deal of concern, because it was about 10 years ago that they separated the two for some very good reasons, and now they're newly back together. I don't think we've seen the problems that separated them 10 years ago rise up yet, but I think they're potentially there. But mental health is a high cost component of our healthcare system. Alcohol and drug is a high cost component of our healthcare system. And they're separate but also part of the same system. Maybe they become carve outs in some way, I don't know. In some parts of the system they are, in some parts of the system they're joined in. You got a lot on your plate, Mr. Chair. You absolutely do. But I'm not sure that we can get a really true picture of all of this until we have the mental health presentations here.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Tomei.
Thank you. I want to follow up on Representative Cruz mentioned NAMI, and I think we should be hearing from other consumer advocates as well as NAMI, not just mental health
right.
consumer
right.
advocates, but other consumer advocate. Right, and I appreciate that. Thank you.
Go ahead, Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it's Ben Franklin that said an ounce of prevention is worth a ton of cure or a pound of cure. And I know in dentistry there is a major amount of treatment that can be avoided by good preventive care. And the more also in the medical side, the more we can train people and help people to see the benefits of preventing disease, the less cost we're going to be spending on treating it. So I'd like to see a segment at least on how can we, I think you could contract with every dental office in the state for a small amount to treat every child with occlusal protection or fluorides or whatever you want to do for a very small cost and not even spend any money on treatment. Those are the kind of things that we need to at least consider before we start spending money for treatment.
So you want to look at the... Excuse me. I really would have liked to have had some of you testify, but based on this behavior, we will recess the committee. their chairs and a couple committee members make their way to the dais. We've been getting input as to who the committee members want to hear from as we go forward. Any other quick suggestions before...
Mr. Chair, if I might.
Of course.
I think that all of us, through this whole process, have had our heartstrings just tugged clear out of shape, and we don't take the task that we have at hand lightly at all, and we take absolutely no glee in the job that we have to do. And we recognize very, very clearly the impact that we're having on people's lives, and that the impact that we're having isn't going to make people's lives better in the short term. And I would appreciate, I know that there are people out there that live the reality of losing what they once had in the protection and the security from the health coverage programs that you've had. We need solutions here. We need to get your ideas on how to help us fix the system. That we're very willing to listen to the problems that we know that you're being caused by the situation that we find ourselves in. But really what we need to hear are, help us find a way out of this. So it would be very heartening to me if we could get any kind of suggestions that you have from your perspective about how to make this better.
And so, hold on just a second, Gwyneth. Representative Bates.
I hate to return to our previous discussion after what's happened here in the room, and I would echo what Representative Morgan has said. I have the unique responsibility of working with these groups on a daily basis in my practice. I know they are fearful, and that fear makes them angry, and I understand that anger. But please work with us. Being angry with us does not solve the problem. We need help. We need ideas. We're willing to work with you. Having said that, there's two other groups that I would like to have come before us yet.
Is that young lady in the flowered dress? Why don't you come forward? And we'll get Representative Bates. What are the two suggestions? You have those real quick?
I would like to hear from the Hospital Association and as a representative to give us a picture of what it means to them in this system and what cost savings they can bring to us. And in addition to the health plans and in addition to the insurers, I want to hear carefully from the safety net clinics about what their position is too, because they are an integral part of this. And they can bring us help also.
Okay, let's flesh that out in a little bit. One of the things we require is your name, and could you spell it out for us, please?
My name is Hope Whitehead, HopeWhiteHead. I really think I do have a problem to the or a solution to the problem. We have a really bad problem also. I read the paper. I'm in Lincoln County. I read the paper Monday and or Wednesday and Friday. I noticed that one of the problems there is rampant of is alcohol and tobacco. You see, if we solve the problem of alcohol, if we raise the taxes way on alcohol, people are not going to be able to buy the alcohol. People are not going to be able to go to jail. We're not going to be able to support them through, feed them three meals a day forever, how long that is. And then, we don't have to send out troopers or police officers to go get them while they're driving under the influence. We don't have to pay for the classes that they take because of the problem that they have with the alcohol. Because if they can't buy the alcohol, then the problem's solved. We have the problem about tobacco. We raised sky high on the tobacco also. We're not going to have the problem of the hospital bills, of people being sick and having to be in the hospital and pay for the medical cost of the tobacco problem because of it hurting their bodies.
So alcohol and tobacco.
Yes. Yes, sir, that's my solution.
Tax them into oblivion.
Right. Right, because I think once we do that, we're going to save lots and lots of money.
I really appreciate, Mr. Chair, the thought that you've put into this, and I really appreciate you coming forward with a constructive solution, and I appreciate the courage that it took you to sit there and talk to us about it. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much for listening to Mike.
This is the gospel truth. We come to testify before each other's committees a little bit sometimes. And we get nervous when we sit right there where you are. You're
I'm
doing
not a bit
good.
Nervous, actually.
Well, you look good. There you go.
Thank you very much.
I'm jealous. Rhonda, are you waiting? Okay.
Yeah, thank you very much for listening to my ideals. I think I really do have a solution for the problem.
Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
You bet. And we hope we didn't make you too late. See ya. Okay, we are going to take a few testifiers here till 4:30.
Mr. Chair, there's a lady in the back row whose name I don't know with the beige sweater. I think she wanted to testify. Did you want? Do we have
That's
people
Ruth.
Right up?
That's Ruth.
I don't
Ruth.
Think so.
Did you want to testify? I just wanted to acknowledge that you're here and appreciate you coming.
Let's get Gwyneth. Gwyneth has been here almost every day, and there's been these informational meetings. So,
we'll put you in the middle chair there.
Gwyneth, for you to testify, you don't have to sit, but you're going to have to talk to your right. Okay, and maybe talk loud.
There they are. They're right in front of you now. Right in your under.
Perfect.
Hello.
Hello.
Okay.
Okay. So my name is Gwyneth Van Frank Carlson, and I spell that G-W-E-N-E-T-H, small V-A-N, space, capital F-R-A-N-K, space, capital C-A-R-L-S-O-N. Took my kids quite a while to learn that. And I'm from Blue Jean, Oregon. That's the new name of our little town. And I was here yesterday and listened to you guys do all of your process, and I learned a lot, but I was very concerned about the fact that we, the consumers, I despise that word, the clients, the people of Oregon, are numbers on a spreadsheet. This population group, that population group, and there wasn't anything, and I know you guys have hearts, and you guys aren't getting paid very much to be here, and it's a huge responsibility that you bear. And you have only so much money that's been allowed to be raised, and that's, you know, that's part of my solution, is raise more revenues, but, you know, I know you had trouble with that. So I really do acknowledge your difficulty. And we're here to support you guys doing the right thing. Because no one of you and no one of us wants 5,000 people to drop dead in the next 5 months unnecessarily. Sure, there's dead people all the time, but you don't just go pull the plug on them. And you know that, and we know that, and when you guys continue in your process and talk about us like little numbers on a spreadsheet, it's just not okay, and we won't follow the process. So I'll respect it as long as you respect our lives. And that's just the bottom line. You know? I understand that we have to solve this big problem of health reform. There are a lot of opinions that consumers have about how agencies could function better and how we could be more involved, as I sent out all of you a proclamation that was our statement on how we wanted to be involved at the policy table. We want consumer representation. We don't want you guys to just sit here in your ivory tower and talk about us like we're just little people that don't really count. And they cost lots of money. You know, many, many, many of us work for a living, and these services being withdrawn mean that we can no longer be productive people. We're not just laying around in bed. And we are taxpayers, some of us, and more of us would be if we had federal laws that would allow it. The Social Security Administration, if you know much about it, has a lot of really screwy, convoluted, bureaucratic
baloney that could be simplified, just like you're talking about with the health reform system. And if you would allow us to give you the expertise and our experience and be involved rather than just here and there a little moment or two, you know, we'll talk to all the providers and all the hospitals and all the lobbyists. But what about the little ragtag people that can hardly afford a bus ticket to get here? So, we are going to be here, and we want to hold you to doing your the right thing. And anybody else have anything else they want to say that I forgot?
We'll get him up, Gwyneth.
Okay, great. Thank you very much for making room on your agenda for us to stay in. I really appreciate that. I understand you weren't invited, but it's just really, really, really important to us that we be here. So that's why we're here.
We're happy you're here. Hold on. You might a couple questions or comments? Representative Morgan.
I can't see
you. Representative Morgan.
Just a comment that, Gwyneth, your comments are so heartfelt, and I think that all of us, I know that I can't underline how difficult this is for all of us on this side of the table, too, and that we do recognize that the human lives that are hanging in the balance here, and we do recognize the importance of what we're doing to your life and to the lives of all the people that receive these services. And I would ask you to keep coming and keep being here the way that you've been here through all the hearings, because we need to continually be reminded of why we're doing this.
Thank you. And I really do know what a hard job you have. And you have all these constraints about we don't have enough revenue, we don't have enough people to vote in this way. And, you know, frankly, I have no understanding of why people would want to be fiscally responsible when people's deaths and lives are hanging in the balance. So, you know, we all went to kindergarten. We all learned the rules in kindergarten. Wash your hands, you know, take care of each other, take a nap every day. It's really simple. Take care of each other. You know, this is an interdependent society. As much as we all think we're an island, and that, God, why do we have to take care of those people? But, you know, all it takes is a banana peel under your foot, and you're down. Or more. I went blind at 29. I was one of you until I was 29. And, boy, I sure didn't know I was going to go blind, let me tell you. And when it happened, if it weren't for this state of Oregon and its rehabilitation services provided by the Commission for the Blind, which I know hasn't even been discussed here in all the CHS stuff, I wouldn't now be working as a functionally productive tax-paying office manager for a construction company. We thank God my boss is giving me lots of time off so I can be here. So you can thank, I can thank them for giving me the training so I can be here. And thousands of other people. And all it takes, you guys, all it takes is one little shift, one little chance happening, and then it's your turn. And how many of you, tell me, how many of you have disability insurance? Not health insurance. Do they provide you a state, whatever you are, as employees, I guess, with disability insurance? Are you nodding your head?
I think we're all sitting here going, we don't know.
That's the point.
I think we have work to do.
I do.
It's not part of your health insurance package. It's not part of your life insurance package. My husband is a contractor. He climbs on top of three-story buildings, and he said, I'll never fall off. I'm not signing that thing for long-term disability care. And I said, oh, yeah, and I'm going to drive you to the hospital after you fall off the roof. And I'm going to take the kids to school after you fall off the roof. And he signed it. And 4 years later, he didn't fall off the roof, but he developed heavy metal poisoning, and he was out for 4 months. And guess what paid? Long-term disability insurance. And if you guys don't have it, just know that you'll be in our shoes, and without any safety net, there'll be a black hole for you to fall into, and there won't be any safety net. This is not just for those people. This is for you and your kids. What if one of your kids is born with Down syndrome tomorrow? You know, or your mother develops Alzheimer's. So you know this. This isn't just taking care of populations. Spreadsheets.
and numbers. And we are all for raising revenue. And I know you guys feel like you're bound by, you know, whatever, expectations and big power lobbyists and corporations and money and et cetera. And all of that is just, you know, gamesmanship. But we're people, and so are you. And we're all here in it together. And I will be here every day to remind you. Please do the right thing and let us help you do it.
Mr. Chair, Representative Merkley.
Gwyneth, thank you very much for your testimony. You've reminded us, as we should be reminded every day, that behind every number is a human face. We are seeing that almost, I think, virtually every representative here sees that every day in their office, because we've all been receiving a stream of constituents who have been telling us their stories. So even if the stories, we have not yet heard them before this committee, we are hearing them daily. But thank you for your reminding us of it here. Second, you've noted that the real experts are the people who have negotiated the system and come to understand it, how its failings and its strengths, from a very personal engagement. And we will be turning to you as experts who understand what works and what doesn't. And I think that will be very valuable in helping us understand what needs to be changed the most and what needs to be kept. So we look forward to your ongoing participation and that of others who bring that same expertise.
Thank you. And thanks for giving us time to speak. And we still want you to pass Karen Minnis' proposal and then some.
Well, Gwyneth, we appreciate you being here, and you're welcome to come every day. We respect your right to participate in your and my process, but you've got to respect our right to have a process. So everyone, I absolutely guarantee everyone that by the time this is over, you will have more than ample opportunity to testify ad nauseum.
I'm willing to follow your process as long as you deal with the top priorities. And I know this long-term business of solving the long-term problem is really, really important long-term. It's very important. But we have critical issues that must be talked, and that's why we've interrupted your meeting.
Wow.
It just has to be. You can't let people die by pulling the plug on them.
And if you continue to interrupt the meeting, then nothing will get done, and both sides lose.
Okay, critical issues first, and I won't interrupt.
Well, let's remember this, and I think you alluded to this earlier, and it was, I think it's Graham Fulham's book, I Learned Everything I Need to Know in Kindergarten.
Mm-hmm.
Don't hit, share, yep, and take a nap.
Okay.
That's all we all really need.
I remember this the best. Don't hurt each other and clean up your mess. Take a nap every day, wash before you eat, hold hands, stick together, look before you cross the street. And remember the seed in the little paper cup. First the roots go down, and then the plant grows up.
Very good. Okay, we've got other people that want to testify. This lady over here has had her hand. Come on up. We call it enter and sign in, please. And if you would, spell your name.
My name is Amy Sackett, and it's spelled A-M-Y. S like it's Sam, A-C-K-E-T-T. And I just want to ask, I am a mental health consumer, and my diagnosis is post-traumatic stress disorder. And one of the things that I have not heard, I have heard you want to talk to mental health consumers and drug and alcohol, because they all do tie in. But because of my diagnosis, I am diagnosed this way because of incest and domestic violence at home. Nobody has mentioned talking to the domestic violence arena, and I just ask that you would include and think about inviting them in, because it is proven that up to almost 80% of all mental illnesses are caused by some trauma due in the household, and that you could take that into consideration.
Thank you. That's an excellent suggestion.
Any questions for Amy? How about this? You know what? Hold on just a second. How about this gentleman? I'm sorry, I don't know names. The right there, yeah. He's moving.
You asked for...
Ken, could you give your full name and spell it, please?
Thank you. My name's Ken Rivernider. That's spelled like river. And then N as in Nancy, I, D as in dog, E-R, from Eugene. And you asked for potential solutions, and two solutions come to mind that could save the state a ton of money. First and foremost is not to throw the many consumers into your emergency medical system. You know, let them get the appropriate services and keep them out of that emergency situation that will throw the whole system into turmoil. Second that came to mind that was referred to earlier is tobacco is bankrupting the state health system. Increase the taxes, which will prevent, they say it has the greatest impact on the poor, which are future health care consumers, and the kids, which are also future health care consumers. It is most likely to stop them from smoking, and I don't think a tax increase on tobacco would hurt a bit. It would help considerably. Thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you very much for coming forward.
Any questions for Ken? No, you're looking good, buddy. Yes, sir.
My name is Steve Weiss. I'm board president of the Mental Health Association and vice chair of the Multnomah County Disability Services Advisory Council. In one sense, I'm at a loss for what to say because the issue of health care is so complex, but I will try and condense things as best I can. The American people and the United States of America as an entity has yet to make up its mind whether it considers health care a human right to be guaranteed its citizens or a privilege to be earned by its citizens. I mean specifically here adequate and comprehensive health care. This, in the face of the fact that every industrialized nation in the world has made up its mind and has decided that it is a human right, and in almost all of those countries, government is the guarantor of that right. In this country, we have a proposal by the current occupant of the White House to have a universal health care system, or at least a proposal by Senator John Breaux, which may be looked on favorably by the White House, to have a health care system where everybody is required to buy insurance. Those who can't afford to buy it will be subsidized, and it will all be done through private insurance companies. I won't go into why, but I think that's a recipe for disaster. So at some point, the federal government will make a decision here. In the state of Oregon, the Oregon Health Plan was designed to expand the federal Medicaid program here in this state. It did so, at least for a while, before the state's economy essentially collapsed. This morning, at a press conference held by HISCO, the Human Services Coalition of Oregon, we heard people who are being hurt by that collapse. We heard people who are heart transplant recipients who may die before the end of February because they've been cut off the medically needy program. We heard mental health consumers who may experience serious crises and possible suicides because they've been discontinued from the medically needy program and are not getting their medications. We heard a cancer survivor who has experienced grievous problems and who is within survival priority levels 15 to 17 of long-term care, tell us that she didn't know what to do in terms of being able to continue to get the help that she needs in order to survive herself. All of these folks are in imminent danger of losing their lives, and we don't know what to do about it. We hope that Speaker Minnis's proposal will pass the legislature. But we also know that it's been announced that in the next revenue forecast, there is going to be a new budget shortfall within the remainder of this biennium that at minimum will be $90 million and at maximum will be $300 million. Something has gone terribly wrong in Oregon. Even if I wanted to assign blame, I wouldn't take the time to do it now. All I know is that help, financial help, is immediately needed for the folks that we saw this morning at the press conference and for many, many other folks on cuts that have been made as a result not only of the failure of Measure 28, but as a result of cuts that have been made all year in five special sessions and cuts taken by the E-Board last November. Somehow, that money needs to be found. If it's not found, people will suffer greatly and people will die. There's no doubt about that, despite voter skepticism prior to January 28th. That it was going to happen, and they're being convinced that these were scare tactics that wasn't going to come through. Truthfully, Speaker Minnis's proposal, $15.3 million, may be the only thing we're able to get. I don't know. I hope that's not true. But if you see folks here today that have been desperate, folks here today that have been angry, folks here today that have interrupted these proceedings, it's because of the level of desperation that we feel and the frustration that we feel that avenues of relief seem to be extraordinarily limited. We all have friends and colleagues who are going to be affected by these cuts, who may lose their health because of these cuts, and who may die because of these cuts. If this were happening to your friends and colleagues, would you feel any differently, or for that matter, behave much differently than we have? I ask you to ask yourselves that question, because I think if you answer it honestly, most of you would probably say, no, I wouldn't behave any differently, especially if it were a close friend or a family member. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yes, sir.
Can I like to give my card up wherever possible?
If you give them to her, she'll give them to us, and you can start to testify.
Okay, great. I'm not one who's in the problem area right now.
Can you enter inside?
Oh, excuse me. You have my card, though. Okay, it's a most cost-effective way. My name is Garth Putnam. It's G-A-R-T-H-P-U-T-N-A-M. And I do have my email address there for you. I come from a generation. My mother, dad had a nervous breakdown. Mother had a choice. She made a choice of being a provider. and she was a good provider in a nursing home, and then later on for cerebral palsy people. I can't believe this is happening. What is their priority here? I don't know what our priority is. It's not life. I can understand that, okay. But I just can't see. Well, my solution, I don't look for your solutions. My solution was to educate my kids at home. Fortunately, I married well. My wife was educated. And she got the law changed. And we have 1.5% people educating their kids at home. Well, what if we had 3%? Where would your problem be? How many people have come to you from the homeschooling movement for asking aid? How about you?
Asking for aid?
Yes. Anybody here?
Come every session.
Yeah, I was on the school board. They came on a regular basis, and we helped support them in their endeavors. We actually paid them money for doing that.
Right.
It was still a savings for the system, though.
Huh?
It was still a savings for the system.
True. And the marriage between the homeschooler and the public sector can't be emphasized how important that is, because there's things that don't happen at home. I can understand that. But we're getting. I mean, that's just one little point I wanted to make out. And then I'll say, well, my second point was. My first point was my mother was a caregiver. So you're a safety net, actually, for a lot of people that making big bucks being caregivers. I don't think there's many making over $8 an hour. So there's a safety net right there. So that's pretty important. Maybe some you know, it's just, why do we have to cut down on this particular area? I don't know. I know one thing, you're not going to have to see me for the next 3 weeks. Because I'll be in Washington, D.C., traveling in my air miles, visiting my sister, and enjoying life, and seeing my representatives and so forth. But there's so many more answers by just giving a safety net to the needy. Not needy, because these people are educated. They could be solving your problems of education by calling up and saying, okay, what's your problem? Excuse me, my pattern is not good here. We ask a kid to be go get an education at school, store him as long as possible, or else we could say, here's the block of information. Here is the block of information. What grade do you want to be in? You will be tested in the fall of the year. No problem. If you want to be in the first grade twice, no problem. If you want to be in the third grade, go for it. Simple solution. Wrong. I don't know what's too complex. We don't want to identify that we have an illegal immigrant population here, and who's picking up the bill for this? So we won't cover that one. That's not politically correct. I'm sorry. I withdraw that from the table. That's all I have to say.
Thank you,
Gertz. Yes, ma'am. I'm getting tips here.
My name is Laura Woodruff, Woodruff, and I'm from Portland. Several years ago, when there was a vacant spot on the Portland Public Schools school board, I decided I would run for school board. Thank God I didn't get the job. When I was running for school board, I had a platform of, why are you keeping sports and eliminating music? I have been a professional musician for 25 years, and music is very personal. Because as far as I'm concerned, music is the only international language that there really is. You can go to any country and play an instrument and be accepted in their society, where it's not always true with sports. I'd like to ask each one of you collectively, how many of you are disabled? Do you know? You sure that's it? How many of you wear glasses? If you took them off, would you be disabled? Mm-hmm. Because obviously you use a corrective device to correct a disability. Okay? I offered Representative Westland a challenge a little bit earlier, which he graciously accepted, and this is going to be, I hope I'm not going to laugh all day, but I think it's going to be very effective in your committee work to find out just what it's like to be disabled for a day. And he'll be able to tell you at the end of the day, I'm going to bring a scooter down here and let him ride in a scooter all day. Going around corners and doing all kinds of things. I have asked the three people that rode down here with me today to come up with a list of advocacy groups that I would like you to contact for their input on what you would like to see. And the next time we come down to Salem, hopefully we will have a list to present to each of you so that you know what advocacy groups want to work with you and want to help find a solution to this problem. And I'm glad it's you doing the work and not me. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Laura. You get in touch. You can film me. You can laugh at me. I'll be on that thing all day. Well, that sounds like Bill.
Here we are.
Mr. Levine, do you want to testify?
Thank you.
You bet.
My name is Mike Levine. That's L-E-V-I-N-E. Actually, the speakers before me have said most of it, and people are going to die, which is the big concern of all of us. Things have to be done. We've been walking the halls 2, 3, 4 days a week. We're going to be here again tomorrow, and we're going to try to let everybody hear us that will listen to us. I know you folks need to figure out a way for revenue. And the scuttlebutt I've been hearing today around the Capitol is beer and wine tax. And I certainly hope that or other ideas to raise revenues will happen, because, again, we heard $90 million this morning, and before the day was over, we heard the 90 could be $300 million. So without revenues, it's just going to be a disaster. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming. And stop by, Mike, any time. I know you're outside. I was on a conference call earlier, but who else? Show of hands. Oh, there you go.
Well, I'm Lynn McKinney, and I have a disability. I also work with people with disabilities, or I did until I was laid off in the past, but that's okay. My main concern is that the people that are being cut are the people that are being devalued by the state and the society, and that have been devalued and been considered extraneous or cast off or incapable or unable, or people who were, up until the late 70s, mostly placed in institutions. I don't want to go backwards. We fought long and hard to get out. I myself was institutionalized as a child in Indiana. We fought long and hard to get out and be part of the community and to contribute to the community. The message that you're sending not only to those of us with disabilities but to the rest of the states and people with disabilities really don't count. We can do away with them pretty easily. I'm here to tell you that isn't true. And I want to ask you all, what are you going to say to your children when they're stepping on their bodies on the way to school? Because that's what's going to happen. People will drop in the streets even with this new plan to restore 15 million, that isn't going to be enough. More people need the money. More people are going to die. More people are going to become more severely disabled because they don't have the assistance they need. Please, just don't let it happen. Do a luxury tax. Legalize marijuana and tax that. Then you go, there's a plan.
Sell the governor's mansion.
But don't say to the world that the state of Oregon considers people with disabilities throwaway people. Please.
That's a solution. We like to hear solutions. Thank you, Lynn, very much. Anybody else? Gwyneth, we're 15 minutes over already. I'm trying to get as many people up here as I can. Come on, Jan. All right. All right. Thank all of you for coming.
We wish you the.
You bet.
Thank you.
The only problem we're having is that this wasn't invited testimony today. We are very thankful for your testimony. Thank you. You are going to have more opportunities to speak. In fact, it wouldn't surprise me if several members of this committee, you know, weren't in touch with you saying, come back and testify again. But we are going to have weeks and weeks and weeks of testimony. So, and we understand that, and we appreciate you. Thank you very much. Okay, we will. Hold on. Ready to go? We will adjourn the committee.